Path to Unconditional Love, Chapter 10, Conquering Death. The city seminar ended. The mentors and their assistants left, leaving us in a state of excitement and inspiration. On this wave, in our town, there appeared a group of those who wanted to continue doing practices and continue to familiarize with the knowledge. I was being actively invited there, but I was in no hurry to join. Despite the fact that I really liked the seminar, I was well aware that a city seminar and a group were not the same things. At the seminar, we worked with experienced mentors who personally communicated with the teacher and received his instructions. In the group, the participants conducted classes themselves without mentors who knew the answers to all questions. Besides, I suspected that women who were gathering there were much older than me. As a young girl, I did not really want to spend time with people of that age. However, after being persuaded by Vera, who was an active member of the group, I decided to attend one of the classes. Once I got there, I looked around the audience critically enough, watched, weighing all the pros and cons to make a decision. I listened to myself, wondering if I wanted to stay and if I wanted to be a part of this community. The group was small, but its composition was, contrary to my ideas, quite heterogeneous. The class was attended not only by women in age, but also men and even young guys, including Vera's nephew Oleg, whom I already knew quite well. Some people seemed to me downright freaky and not in the best sense of the world. For example, a man in cheap baggy tights who sat majestically on the sidelines, not taking part in the discussions, not even making attempts to engage in dialogue with others. As I found out later, this man used to study in an eco village, where he was told that in a previous life he had been a pharaoh. So, when he returned from the eco village, he became like a hostage to this image, without a job, with no money even for new pants. His regal behavior only concealed an inner emptiness and clearly contradicted the appearance, and therefore looked ridiculous and absurd. I didn't really want to talk to socially marginalized people. Of course, I understood that one should not judge the entire group by one person, but this pharaoh was then one of those cons that I carefully put into the scale. Judging the group from the point of view of common people's criteria, I was more and more inclined to believe that the first lesson would be the last. And then, something happened that made me change my mind completely. This happened at the very end of the class, when we were doing relaxation. One of the advantages of the classes was the atmosphere, which helped to disconnect from everyday life, to tune into the perception of subtle realms. Candles burned, the air was scented with incense, and a large portrait of the teacher hung on the wall. We sat on the mats in the lotus position, inhaled the pleasant smells, and went into deep relaxation. And then, against the background of a long, simple music, a mantra began to sound. I was breathing deeply and fast, listening to the strong, magnetic voice that was chanting the mantra. and I suddenly realized that I could not move. My chest swelled with energy, with emotions and feelings that could not be contained. Tears ran down my cheeks. As I learned later, this phenomenon was called aura expansion in spiritual language. The mantra had penetrated to the most remote corners of my soul. I felt indescribably good. It was as if a wanderer who had been forced to rove through strange worlds all his life had suddenly found his way home. At that moment, I remembered something important, long forgotten. Something that was once part of me, but was later lost. Maybe something from a previous life. These experiences captured me so much that I could not return to reality for a long time. I don't know how long I was in this state. I gradually began to become aware of what was happening. At first, I felt someone gently touch my shoulder. Then, I heard a man's voice that sounded vaguely familiar.
"Are you here? Are you back?"
I raised my eyelids with difficulty. My eyes slowly focused, and soon I could distinguish the young man's face. It was Alec. He was looking into my eyes, trying to see if I was all right.
"So?" he asked with a smile. "Will you come to our classes?"
I nodded happily and smiled. "Yes, absolutely!" At that moment, all my fears and doubts disappeared. The experience crossed them all out at once, as it had done at the city seminar, when I heard a song based on Kipling's poems. For me, it was no longer a question of whether I wanted to or not. It was unequivocal. Yes! I was literally bursting with energy. I wanted to share my experience, to embrace the whole world. As my emotions subsided, I could not shake the feeling that I had heard this mantra before. A critical mind demanded a logical explanation of the effect it had on my soul. In the following classes, I talked about this with Vera, with Alec, and with other members of the group. Consciously and subconsciously, I searched for the answer to this question for several days, and finally found it. At one point, as if an invisible curtain fell down, I remembered where I had heard the words of this mantra. It was a long time ago, in my childhood. My mother instilled in me the love for reading. She was very fond of reading, and because she worked in the trade sector, she could easily get a variety of books, which was not so easy to find at the time of the Union. My mother had a large closet in her room with rare books that even a modern librarian would have envied. When I was a very young girl, I also had a closet, not as big as my mother's, but my own, a separate one. One day, I found a 4-volume book on medicinal plants, herbs, and folk medicine. I had never been interested in this topic. My sister was more obsessed with plants. But for some reason, I wanted to pick one of the books and look at it. I was flipping through the pages with concentration when I came across several pages with an unusual font.
I looked closely. It was not written in Russian, but in some strange, incomprehensible language. Later, I realized that they were mantras in Sanskrit. Then, I just liked the combination of words and sounds. One of the mantras, in particular, caught my attention. I even wanted to learn it by heart, but I never did, because I did not understand the meaning. But even then, I was shaken. Something deep, hidden in the layers of centuries, moved my soul. Now, I clearly remember that at that moment, I paid attention to the very same mantra that resonated in my heart and caused a storm of emotions in the classroom. When I got home, I found this book, and many years later, I learned the mantra by heart. It was the death-conquering mantra. Later, I was more than once convinced that the mantra really had great power. I once used it to save a friend from death, almost intuitively. It was in Nizhny Novgorod, where Alessa and I went to a good friend's birthday. There was a big party. Everyone wished the man a happy birthday, danced, and had fun. Music was playing loudly. And suddenly, I noticed that Alessa was sitting at the table and she was not being herself. Her eyes was protruding, her face white as a sheet of paper. I realized that she was very ill. But at first, I thought that she had eaten something wrong that made her feel sick. Somehow, we reached the bathroom with her. Alessa sat on the edge of the bath, convulsively clutched the ledge with both hands and shivered. Sweat rolled down her face and body. She could not speak, but her eyes were clearly pleading for help. Seeing her condition getting worse by the second, I searched for a way to help, quickly turning over the options in my head. Call an ambulance? Given the speed of our doctors, it could be too late when they arrived, especially since we were in another city. Call one of the guys for help? But what could they do? None of them were doctors, or even had studied medicine. The decision came suddenly. I went over to my friend, put one hand on her chest, and the other on her back, and started chanting the same mantra. I sang loudly and long. At the same time, slowly moved my hands from top to bottom, holding my palms parallel to each other on both sides of her body. I finished chanting the mantra when I reached her feet. And now, when the floor was almost a few centimeters away, Alessa breathed a sigh of relief. I looked at her and was surprised to see her sitting up as if nothing had happened. There was gratitude in her eyes. "Thank you," she whispered, looking at me, stupefied. "What happened to you?" "I don't know, but I suddenly felt so bad that I thought I was going to die right now. There was this thick darkness in front of my eyes. And when you started singing and moving your hands, that darkness, it seemed to follow them down like a clot. And then, poof, it flowed out. It was as if it fell down on the floor." I smiled, still not believing that I had just saved a person's life. I do not know where this knowledge came from. No one had taught me to treat people like this before. It all happened spontaneously and very quickly. Later, I treated people with this mantra more consciously, and each time I was surprised by amazing results. So, I began to regularly attend group classes. Just like at the seminar, we also had lectures and practical lessons that we prepared and conducted ourselves, in turn and at will. Each member of the group decided for themselves when they were ready to start giving lectures and conducting practices. There was no compulsion or pressure. If at the seminar the choice of topics for lectures and practices was subject to a certain system, the lessons were selected according to the topics in the modulus. In the group, each presenter chose topics according to their preferences. This was not forbidden and even welcomed, as it helped the lectures to open up and nurtured the desire for spiritual guidance. We took materials for lectures from books and manuals of the school. This was an unspoken rule, thanks to which it became possible to preserve the purity of the knowledge. The lectures were not as long as the city seminar. All of us, members of groups, took our first steps and just learned to teach the truth. Each lecturer decided for themselves how long their speech would be. The practical part played the main role in the classes, and the lectures gave food for the mind, helped to tune in, and prepared us for the upcoming spiritual practices and meditations. We also conducted them ourselves, following the school's guidelines. During one session, and it could last from 2 to 4 hours, several speakers would take turns. In each lesson, there was always a module dedicated to yoga. Before the city seminar, I treated yoga as an extravagant form of gymnastics. For me, it was more of a sport than a spiritual practice. This attitude was not accidental. Many coaches really reduced yoga only to the physical aspect, without making any reference to spiritual meanings. At best, it was a good stretch for the muscles, followed by relaxation. At worst, just a set of athletic exercises. It was at the seminar that the mentors told us that real yoga includes 3 directions. The first is working with the body. The second is working on the emotional level, and the third is working with the mind. The yoga complexes that our mentors gave us necessarily covered all the 3 areas. That is, when a person was in a certain yoga position, there was work with the body. At the same time, they visualized an image, tried to immerse themselves in it, experience the corresponding emotions. So, if they were sitting in the Buddha position, they would imagine that they were a Buddha. Working with the mind implied a plot involving both the pose and the image. For example, we were given the avatars of Vishnu complex. First, the legend of the god Vishnu and his earthly incarnations was told. Each of the incarnations, images, corresponded to a certain yoga pose. So, during the practice, we stood in poses and lived the sensations of all the avatars of Vishnu. During one group sessions, we did the pose of the peaceful warrior, a warrior who is gaining strength to fight. The pose is not the most difficult. To do it, you had to first kneel and then lean back and lie on your back. I looked around. Everyone was at ease with the task, lying relaxed on their backs, their calves tucked under them. Judging by the expressions on their faces, everyone was getting high impressions, relaxing, and having an interesting experience. I realized that all attempts to lie on my back from this position were accompanied by severe pain in my knees. I was so ashamed because many of the members of the group were old enough to be my mother and did the exercise with ease and pleasure. Without saying anything about my negative feelings, I still lay down, overcoming the pain and clenching my teeth. While the leader was telling the legend of the peaceful warrior, while everyone was getting into character and immersing themselves into the necessary emotional state, I made a Herculean effort not to cry out in pain. My legs ached unbearably, but I, obeying the syndrome of an excellent student, still decided that I would lie until the end. This turned out to be a big mistake. I did not know then that yoga should never be accompanied by self-abuse. I was overcoming myself, just doing sports, in fact. I could not immerse myself in the image. I could not properly perceive the legend. And of course, there was no question of any exalted experiences. After the exercise, everything seemed normal. But the next morning, I realized that my legs were not flexing at all. My knees refused to perform their usual functions. It was terrible. But of course, I could not afford myself to fall out a busy work schedule. Therefore, I moved like a circulus with my legs completely straight. The descent and ascent of the stairs. We lived on the 5th floor in a building without an elevator. Turned into real torture. But there were also positive aspects. Thanks to the trauma, I saw the amazing effect that women experienced when they got into the school field. It would seem that being unable to bend the knees was a deformity that could repel anyone. But no, thanks to the energy of the school, a field of charm had been created around me. So strong that men began to carry me in their arms. Literally, they saw my torment and were happy to help me. One of these men was Denis, that young entrepreneur I had met in the nightclub. It was a colorful sight. He carried me everywhere in his arms. One day, we went to Chebaksary, as I had to make purchases for video rental there. So, he would not let me take a step. He would pick me up right off the car and carry me to the shopping center across a huge square. Then we went back to the car in the same manner. Denise did all this so playfully, fervently, and lively. We felt good and easy. We laughed, attracting curious looks from passers-by, and felt a surge of positive energy. Meeting Denise wasn't as fleeting as I thought it would be. We met periodically, and even though we were busy, miraculously, we found time for each other. Gradually, I got the feeling that we felt really good together. We communicated freely, easily, without any tension, without reproaches and attempts to restrict freedom. And in this, as I now understand, the beneficial influence of the school was also shown. At that time, Alessia and I, among other things, were performing an assignment for Indra, which he gave us before leaving. No, we had not forgotten about it. We had not given up on it. On the contrary, we approached its implementation responsibly and with all possible creativity. The process completely captured us. We even arranged a kind of competition. Who would create the most interesting image? It was as interesting as it was difficult, but the difficulties did not frighten us, but only invigorated us and gave strength. We challenged ourselves and each other and showed real miracles of ingenuity. We boldly experimented with makeup, hairstyles, and clothing. In the morning, I got up with plenty of time, an hour in advance, because I knew that all this hour would be spent on a unique makeup. I looked at my face and said, "God, I want to put on makeup for you. Tell me, what kind of person do you want me to be today?" I created makeup and dressed up, not to show off or for narcissism. I had never considered myself beautiful. I had never liked my own face. You could say that I had low self-esteem about my appearance. When I came up with a new image every day, I dedicated it to God, realizing that I was fulfilling a spiritual task in this way. At first, I did not think through the images in advance. I just took eyeliner, mascara, shadow, lipstick, laid out cosmetics in front of the mirror, and let myself go, being in an open state of prayer. The hands did everything themselves. The clothes were worse. If I could apply my makeup every day and wash it in the evening, I could not just do that with my clothes. At the time, I did not understand what Indra meant when he said that every day we needed to be different, including clothes. To get inspired, I even went to a local beauty contest. I looked at the contestants and tried to imagine some original outfit that no one had ever seen before. I was trying to come up with something completely new. All evening, I was engaged in what is called mental violence, gathered all my strength, honestly tried to invent something unique. But in the end, I was forced to give up. Therefore, I had to be satisfied with the clothes I had, matching different items of clothing, choosing interesting jewelry and accessories. And yet, the main focus was on makeup. We didn't put on some usual makeup, but an exclusive one, which, at that time, no one had heard or knew about. At least in our small town, that was for sure. We applied our original patterns on the eyelids, drew on the face, and created images that attracted the attention of others. At the same time, my sister and I not only showed ourselves to each other, but also went on throughout the day with this look. Day after day, we searched for new ideas and sources of inspiration. When our ideas ran out, we looked at flowers, butterflies, plants, animals, birds. We took combinations of colors, patterns, shapes, and ornaments from nature itself. We drew on the face, the wings of butterflies, dolphins, mountains, and forests. And this also contained a kind of challenge to society. We were noticeably distinguished from the gray mass. We became noticeable. We constantly felt curious eyes on us, but we were not afraid of being judged. There was a special drive on this. People around us followed our daily metamorphosis with curiosity, supported, admired, and shared their ideas. One guy asked if we took photos every day, and was even upset when we said we didn't. It would be really interesting to create a photo album of images, but we had not set such a goal. It got to the point where we had our own fan club. People started coming to the video store just to watch my sister and me. They were both boys and interesting informal personalities who were attracted to us like paper clips to a magnet. Of course, there were those who found it difficult to accept our daring to be different. Some of them were physically unable to cope with the rejection. They flinched when they saw us, and then turned around and left without saying a word. Our marathon lasted for several months. And during this time, I clearly realized that it was also a great filter. Brightness and uniqueness attracted strong, wise, active, and creative individuals. Weak, cowardly, unworthy people were immediately eliminated. Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website, www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.